paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
Welcome to Quest for Gold. We've arrived. It's opening ceremony day in Milano Cortina and our last episode in this Olympic cycle. Let's start with the USOPC's preview press event. USOPC chair and IOC member Gene Sykes said he has been meeting with WADA to help bridge the divide between the U.S. and the World Anti-Doping Agency. The two sides have been at odds since WADA allowed several Chinese swimmers to compete at the Tokyo Olympics after testing positive for banned substances in 2021. The U.S. wants an audit. Meanwhile, WADA has accused USADA, the U.S. agency, of allowing American athletes to compete after they tested positive in 2011 through 2014. The U.S. hasn't paid its more than $3 million annual dues to WADA since 2024. This, of course, comes as the U.S. prepares to host the 2028 Olympics.
I think all of us around the Olympic movement are trying to work together to come to a resolution of the dispute between WADA and USADA, and we'll make good progress on that without going into any of the details. I personally had breakfast with the leaders of WADA myself 2 days ago here in Milan. I have very good dialogue with them. We understand the disagreements and the issues, which are reasonably straightforward and need to be addressed. I believe they will be addressed. I think the IOC is also very interested in making sure that we resolve these differences. It's important to everyone that we have a solid, good relationship with the World Anti-Doping Authorities as we enter the period when we've got two games in the United States. And so that is of primary importance, and we'll behave that way.
Also out of that press conference, USOPC CEO Sarah Hirschlin said the U.S. has exhausted all efforts to get Katie Uhlander qualified for the Games after she failed to reach the necessary points following some strategic moves for qualifying by Team Canada.
As you're likely well aware, we've pursued every pathway to get an assessment and judgment on what happened. And I think both the IBSF as well as now CAS and the Court of Arbitration for Sport have made decisions, and we respect the process and the decisions. You saw us incredibly supportive of Katie. We did help look for an additional spot. Those efforts were unsuccessful, and we have to respect the process.
Also, head of security Nicole Deal discounted reports that ICE agents are going to be used as security for the U.S. delegation during the Games.
I just want to be real clear that we do work with Department of State and DSS, and as far as I know, there are no ICE agents that are, well, I could tell you unequivocally, there are no ICE agents that are part of the Team USA delegation on the ground here in Milan.
We have a little bit of a ski jumping scandal, Olympic uniform ski jumping scandal, that is. Norway is the center of the ski jumping world. Last year, Norway's head coach and a suit technician were seen on video inserting illegal non-elastic stitching into the crotch area of the suits of two jumpers, including the reigning Olympic champ. This was after the suits had already been inspected prior to competition. These two flyers say they were never told about it. They didn't know anything about it. But the International Ski and Snowboard Federation handed down 18-month suspensions for both. They'll still be competing at the Olympics. There's also a second aspect of this that includes acid injections in the crotchal region. I suppose you could call this Inflategate. Think about Austin Powers. This comes from a report out of Germany that skiers had been enhancing their regions, I suppose we could call it, all to increase the service area. WADA said it isn't aware of that report. By the way, there are going to be 3D inspections of all uniforms of ski jumpers prior to competition. Of course, the biggest storyline from Team USA headed into these games is the status of Lindsey Vonn. She did a training session this morning for the first time on that torn left ACL. She was wearing a brace. She finished with the 11th best time. That has no bearing on medal status, but it was her first real test on that injured leg. She believes she can compete at a high level. I asked Dr. Vinaya Jong about it.
I'm an associate professor at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. I'm also a team orthopedic surgeon for Northwestern University football, as well as the U.S. women's national soccer team.
All right. So with that background, you've seen hundreds, probably thousands of torn ACLs. Personally, I've had three torn ACLs before, so I know what it's like. I know what it's like to feel that pop. I know what it's like to have the surgery. I know the recovery that comes after it.
That being said, what I'm seeing Lindsey Vonn do, and I don't know how much you've been able to follow it, I couldn't imagine in a sport like that doing that kind of cutting after that injury. Well, first of all, when you heard about the injury, what did you think? Did you think it would be possible for her to ski, and kind of to what extent, what is her ceiling at this point?
Yeah, I do think that, these high level athletes like Lindsey Vonn are placed in a category, I think, quite different than the rest of the population. As we know, that ACL is important for cutting, pivoting, and especially in downhill skiing, that's where we see a lot of our athletes tear their ACLs. But the higher level athletes do have a special level to bounce back. And I think when I first heard about it, the possibility of her racing was just not out of the question. And clearly over the past week, I've been sort of looking a little bit at her social media posts, seeing her do her, squats, training, side lunges, all with that supportive brace. And it was very impressive to see. And it's something that we never really expect. But even in a lot of our varsity athletes, it's incredible what they can accomplish in such little time in that prehabilitation phase.
So the main situation is the stability, right? That cutting, it makes that knee kind of feel like it slips out of place. And once you have that sensation, you can't forget that sensation. You can't forget about that moment when you had that sensation. So it seems like this is a mental game for her now, pretending that that doesn't exist, pretending like she's the Lindsey Vonn she was before last week.
Yeah, I think, the time that she's put in the rehab prior to even today, I think is a testament of all of the secondary stabilizers. So, making sure that her strength, her form is good. Those are the dynamic things that she has control over if that ACL is indeed compromised. So I think she's sort of proven that to herself and to the United States and to the world, I think, during the trial run. Hopefully, she continues to feel confident, as she competes.
She can't do any more damage to it, right? It's already broken. There's nothing else. I mean, obviously she could do more knee damage on a fall or hurt herself otherwise, but I mean, at this point, she's got no other options, right? She can't have surgery now.
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think that we often forget that in an ACL deficient knee, the menisci are the secondary stabilizers. So if indeed she has a little micro motion, a little micro pivot, then it puts her menisci both at risk. And then if the menisci are already torn, which I think the physicians sort of stated that they were as well, it also puts the collateral ligaments at risk as well. So it is risky, I think, but it's something that, with these high level athletes, you kind of do what you can, and they will tell you, the knee will speak to them.
Does the brace, the knee brace that she had on today, does that obviously that gives you some form of security, but is it a false security?
I think the brace definitely, I think, helps, giving her sort of perhaps that mental feedback of security, as you mentioned. I think it does help to protect a little bit of the side ligaments, so the collateral ligaments as well. But if she kind of takes a little bit of a wrong pivot turn, unfortunately, the brace won't be enough, and she'll have to rely on the rest of her muscles to kind of keep that knee together.
Do you recommend these high caliber athletes go out there? I mean, sometimes they're going to do, regardless of what you say, they're going to go out there. They're going to try to fight through. We know that Mickey Mantle played most of his career with a torn ACL. I mean, granted, that was in the 60s, and, the medical science is greatly advanced. But I'm guessing as a professional in this field, you would recommend not doing this race, although there's obviously a huge storyline and a lot of pressure.
I think timeline actually matters in professional athletes. That is not necessarily applied to the general population, right? And I think that the circumstances are quite different for these athletes. And so I think if she's met all of the strength and movement milestones that her coaches and her medical staff has set forth for her, and she feels confident in herself, then, you know, the only thing we can do as medical providers is talk about the risks. But at the end of the day, if they can do it, then it's their decision.
Now you're going to have all these people coming to you saying, hey, Lindsey Vonn did it. I want to be able to do this. You'd be like, yeah, you know what? You are not Lindsey Vonn.
Right,
I'm sorry. Right.
Right. Right. And I think that's the differentiator that we have to remind everyone that we can't all be like Lindsey Vonn or Mickey Mantle. And that's our role to help support them through their recovery and post-surgery.
Well, heading into the opening ceremonies, the U.S. women's hockey team is 1-0 with a win over Czechia, which most of us knew as Czech Republic. They're now Czechia. The U.S. mixed doubles curling team, the Corys, are now 4-0. They set themselves up well to get out of group play with big wins, including over Team Canada. They have 4 more games before the playoff round begins. And U.S. figure skating is atop the leaderboard in the team event following a top finish by ice dancers Madison Chalk and Evan Bates, second place by Alyssa Liu. They've been collecting points. Ilya Malinin and Amber Glenn are still on the docket as the U.S. looks to cap off back-to-back gold medals in the event. Our final athlete spotlights. We talked to a speed skater you might see a lot of in Italy. Jordan Stolz is a Wisconsin native. He's been blowing the competition away internationally and across the U.S. on the long track. He's expected to be at the top of the podium of all of the events he's slated to take part in. Despite the pressure, the exposure, and having never won an Olympic medal before, this 21-year-old is ready to show the world how fast he can go. Jordan, you competed in Beijing in 2022. You were 17 years old at that time. What were your takeaways from those races that you've kind of folded into your training over the last 4 years, and how did that help you prepare for 2026?
Well, after 2022 was probably the most motivated I've ever been, because it didn't exactly go the way I wanted it to. And there's just some negative impacts in there, like, you know, the living situation at the games because of COVID and then the food and everything. After that, you know, going into the next summer and even into the next couple of years, I was just like, I was so motivated to get better and I knew I could. So it was actually the first World Cup after the Olympics. I won 2 races. And that's when you kind of start seeing the hard work paying off. But now going into 2026, I have multiple world champion wins, and yeah, I'm looking good now. So,
yeah, I mean, you obviously have excelled since Beijing. I mean, what do you attribute that to? Are you a different skater now than you were when you were 17?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've gotten older, stronger, technically better. Actually, a lot stronger, right? Because I was only 17. I'm 21. So now I can do 1500. Back then I wasn't even doing 1500, and now even mass start I'm doing that. So that's 16 laps. So yeah, I'm feeling really strong, and everything's been going well.
What about the mental aspect? Obviously, you're more developed in those regards as well. What would have been your kind of mental achievements over the last 4 years?
Just dealing with, you know, things like nutrition and like different environments when you're traveling. I wasn't that used to that when I was 17, but now I've gone to so many different countries traveling and just learning how to deal with those different situations and still competing well. And mentally, just going from race to race, like once you start becoming really good, there's a little bit of pressure added on there to keep, you know, winning. And I think I've, you know, gotten pretty well, you know, handling that and continuing to just be in the race and knowing what to do. So it's not something that's going to be out of the ordinary going into Milan and knowing it's like a big competition and just performing the best I can.
At the Team USA Media Summit, you were there. They talked a lot about sleep and some of the practices that they've been working with the athletes. Has that been a focus for you, finding ways to get proper sleep? I mean, 21 years old, a lot of 21-year-olds aren't sleeping properly anyways. I mean, have you made it part of your ritual?
It's not part of my ritual. Sometimes my sleep is pretty bad, but you know, if there's a bad day, I can feel it. I'll just pop some like 15 milligrams of melatonin and then just go to sleep. So I should be fine.
As long as it gets through WADA, you're fine in those regards. All right. You looked up to Apollo Ohno and his Olympic performance inspired you to get into the sport. You've mentioned that before. Growing up in Milwaukee probably also helps with Pettit being there, right? That's something that you were able to take advantage of. What do you think about kids watching you in these winter games? Do you think much about, you know, how kids are looking up to you and perhaps the future of, you know, U.S. speed skating is kind of being born out of your success?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that I can inspire many kids, just like how I was inspired too at, you know, the 2010 Winter Olympics by Paolo Ono. And of course, the Pettit was right there. So there's a lot of history there. And yeah, it was great. It was just super convenient to go training there. They have good coaches and everything. And it just really helped me out a lot, you know, having that track there. It's like an Olympic training facility. I've been training there since I was 6 years old. So, I mean, if anybody can do it, they just have to be a little bit inspired. So hopefully I can do that.
I mean, there are two Olympics. Aspects to this, right? Getting inspired watching you and then also having access to such a high quality performance. And there aren't a lot of those around the country, right? I mean, is that something that you'd like to help push and gain traction so kids watching in North Dakota or Georgia can get into the sport?
Yeah, I mean, if it could be, you know, the entire country could be inspired by it, I would love that.
I want to talk a little bit about your bike accident in June. How bad was it, and does it have any impact on you today?
No impact on me today. I mean, it was kind of bad in June. It like split open my shin, the bone was out and everything. It probably affected around 2 weeks of training in total. So, I mean, I had to be super careful with it. Like when I was riding, I would have it wrapped, and I would, you know, be going down a hill on the bike, and I would have to unclip my foot and let it hang because the bumps would be, you know, shaking it. And I didn't want the skin to split back open because it was just barely being held together. So, yeah, it was something I just had to be really careful about. But with like the Olympics this year, there's no way I was just going to sit and do nothing and wait for, you know, the skin to close up. I had to get back on the bike and keep training. So.
And yeah, I believe you said it that at the media summit that you were back on the bike. What was it, a matter of weeks?
1 week only. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't healed at all, but yeah, I just had to do it. So.
How did it happen? Explain the crash to us.
Yeah, so I was doing a sprint, and I was around top speed, around 40 miles an hour. So the chain, I mean, I think I just hit a bump at the exact same time I was pushing down as hard as I can. And I think the frame just flexed a little too much, and the chain just went right over on the big chain ring. And I got, you know, thrown forward, stuck over the bars, and just lost control, went right into the ditch. And yeah, tumbled for, I don't know, quite a while. So you could see all the marks, but luckily I didn't fall like, you know, 10 yards before, because there was big piles of rocks and stuff. And I think I hit one of them, and that's how my shin got cut open. So, but I was pretty lucky.
Yeah. You were in like rural Wisconsin somewhere, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, in Keewascom, which is pretty rural. So
was there anyone else around?
No, I was, you know, in the bushes. If I wouldn't have been able to get my phone, nobody would have found me. So
great. Well, yeah. That's a fun story right there. How stiff is the competition in the 500, the 1,000, the 1500? I mean, we always know when we watch the people who casually watch maybe every 4 years, we know South Korea is always strong. We know the Netherlands is very strong. Is it the same now? Are there other countries that are kind of breathing down your neck as well?
I mean, Poland's been pretty good, like in the 500 meter. I think that's like the most, you know, close distance. 1,000 and 1,500, I'm doing pretty good in that. So I have a fair, you know, pretty good lead. Hopefully I can take that into the games right now, you know. But the 500 is always kind of a toss-up. Like there's Yannick Debu from the Netherlands, who's really good right now, and Damian Zarek from Poland. And they're right, you know, right on me. But if I have a really good one, I don't think they can beat me, but you just never know. So, but they're there. So, but at least I have the 1,000 and 1,500. That's, you know, pretty solid.
Is it hard to be process focused during these races when obviously you want results?
I mean, not necessarily. It's just part of like what has to happen. I mean, I got to train. Like if you don't train, you're not going to be able to win. So it's just something you have to do leading up and time your peak perfectly. And that's all I can do really. So that's what everybody else is going to do. And hopefully I do it the best.
Do you allow yourself to think about Italy much in the lead up? I mean, can you think about the race or the podium or the ceremonies, or are you just trying to focus on tomorrow? I need to do this for training. I need to do that.
It's day to day that I think about, you know, everything, and also looking forward to the future. Cause if you only look what's right in front of you for a bit, you're going to, you know, start to go off track. I don't really think about like the medal ceremony in Milan yet. I don't want to think that far ahead, but yeah, like competing there, kind of envision it with the crowd and everything. And I don't think it's going to be, you know, that much, you know, more like pressure than some of the other bigger races I've done. So I think I'm good in that sense. Just got to do what I can do and I should be good.
Have you seen the venue? Are you going to see the venue or be able to race there prior to the games?
I'm going to train there for about 2 weeks before the games start. I'm not going to race there. I don't think they're having like any more races. They might have a test competition, but that's not like too interesting to me. As long as the ice is the same for everybody, that's like honestly the biggest factor. So
what are you looking forward to most in Italy?
Just a fun games and hopefully some relaxation, right? In a serious competition, which I mean, there's going to be, I think a great team around me. I have, my parents are going to be there, my coach and, yeah, all the sponsors who have been supporting me. It's going to be really good.
Yeah. I was working with Glenn Powell. We all saw the NBC promotion and now you're partnering with Hershey's.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Glenn Powell thing was pretty fun, the film. So, and so was, this Hershey's campaign. It's going to be really great. I enjoyed filming, little surprise, like interview with them where they had my parents come out. It was really great. And I think they're a household name. So it's super cool to be sponsored by them going into the games.
How does this campaign celebrate everyday moments of joy and where you find happiness with Hershey?
Yeah, like I said, they're a household name and you kind of known of them as a kid and growing up. I was known of Hershey's chocolate. My parents, well, actually my mom, I wouldn't say my dad was baking a lot of cheesecakes, but my mom, she makes a lot of cheesecakes and she would use the Hershey's chocolate. So now to be sponsored by them, it's really cool and kind of shows, you know, how far you've made it along this journey.
Yeah. Big part is promoting the sport, obviously promoting the games and you're featured by a lot of companies. A lot of people are interested in that. And do you enjoy kind of that aspect of it? Is it a nice break from the ice?
Yeah, it can be a nice break from the ice, just, you know, because it's something different and it doesn't happen like that often. It's usually like every 4 years, right? Or in my case, this is the first, you know, cycle where I've had, you know, a lot of sponsors come in. But yeah, I mean, some shoots are really fun to film. Yeah, it's been good.
Would you have any pre-race rituals, food, music, things like that? What can we expect before you hit the ice?
I don't really have any pre-race rituals, but I hope I get my Hershey's candy box sent to me in Milan. So
there you go. There you go. That'll do it for this final episode of Quest for Gold. We started way back in the fall in South Korea and pounded out 20 episodes. Feel free to go back and have a listen. Also check out Nexstar's Italy 2026 Rewind live stream at stations across the country. And we've got them posted as well at WGNradio.com. Those daily updates come twice. I'm a frequent contributor on them. Special thanks to WGN's Dave Marzullo for editing and producing all of this content. Now we set to take a break before the big one, the first Olympics on home soil in more than two decades, LA 2028. I'm Ryan Burrow. Enjoy these games in Milan Cortina, and we'll see you down the road.